Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Taksim Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week, Lama Kathy Wesley continues discussing the book The Day of a Buddhist Practitioner by Bokar Rinpoche. In the sometimes frenzied world of daily responsibility and demands, we can lose sight of who we are and act unkindly toward ourselves and others. By consciously remembering our goal of benefiting beings and nurturing our Buddha nature over and over again, we can find fulfillment while also managing our emotions and experiences through mindfulness, love, and compassion. Enjoy the podcast.
So, good morning. Happy to see all of you here today. Today, I'm going to be continuing the discussion of the book, The Day of a Buddhist Practitioner, by Bokar Rinpoche. Part of the reason I wanted to share this book is because it's out of print, and you can't get it except by paying a lot of money to the people at second-hand booksellers. So I thought it would be useful to discuss the main points that Bokar Rinpoche is making in the book. And so I decided to break the book into three parts, the three parts of the day, morning, afternoon, and evening. Last month, I gave the talk on the morning. Today, I'm giving the talk on the afternoon, and next month, I'm giving the talk on the evening. And hopefully, by putting these three together, you'll have a sense of how a Buddhist practitioner spends their day. I guess you could say that my hope in presenting this is to share a little bit of who Bokar Rinpoche was for me personally as a person studying Buddhism, and also to give you a flavor of the impact that mindfulness can have on your everyday life, because it really is mindfulness that facilitates our cultivation of any kind of virtuous mind. If we don't have mindfulness, it's hard to put ourselves on the topic of Dharma. Our mind will be like a pinball going from bumper to bumper to bumper, not really coming together as a whole. So that's why I decided to present about this, because I think that mindfulness is central to our ability to change. Because I don't know about you, but a lot of us had a time in our life where we felt like our mind was not under our control, and that we felt that our minds were sort of out of control, and feeling a little bit, shall we say, worried, anxious, and hopeless about that. Kind of a mixture, you know, like soup. And so in order to help us feel better about the state of our mind, we cultivate mindfulness, the power of mindfulness, through the practice of shamatha meditation. And so I'm going to start by talking about that and then go into a brief review of morning, and then we'll talk a little bit about the midday of a Buddhist practitioner. I'm going to start by reciting a prayer. If this is a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. And if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, dedicating this time together to the benefit of all sentient beings. It's the four-line refuge prayer from the beginning of the Chenrezig Sadhana, and I'll recite it through just once for the sake of time. O Sanje Chudang Soji Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyab Su Chi Da ji jin so ji be su nam ki dro la pen shi san je Drupasho. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chi Orpe De Ten Shala, Kadrin Jembo Gane Che Sun Te, Kusum Tugging A Drup Sal Du So. Okay, thank you. So we started with the idea of mindfulness. When we sit and meditate, we try to place our attention on one object, our breath, and then when our attention wanders from that object, we try to bring it back. And when we bring it back, at first we feel a little disappointed with ourselves, but slowly through the practice, we become a little more gentle with ourselves as we practice. And so this mindfulness and gentleness help us to keep on the cushion and not run away from it. So after we've done this for a while, we have this sense of ourselves as being a person who cultivates attention one moment at a time. We place our attention, it wanders off, we gently bring it back, it wanders off, we gently bring it back over and over again. And so when we do this, we develop mindfulness, which means that we become aware of our thought processes in ways that we didn't before. Before, we were, I guess you could say, swallowed in the belly of the whale, so to speak, to borrow a biblical, you know, a description. We're sort of swallowed by the thought. And sort of for that moment, we take, for lack of a better term, we take rebirth in the world of that thought. And then afterward, yeah, they're having their concluding assembly for the children above us today. So, yeah, it's the last day of school for them. So by doing this practice, we get this mindfulness, and the mindfulness allows us to know what's on our mind. We get this ability to stand outside the thought. Rather than being swallowed by the thought, we get to stand outside of it and see it almost as a third party might see it. Like, oh, I'm thinking X, Y, Z. And for many people, this is a little bit of a revelation because before, they had no choice but to believe whatever was on their minds. Now, with the practice of mindfulness, they can step outside their thoughts just for a moment and say, I have a habit of thinking this. That's interesting. I wonder if I want to change that. At first, it might seem a little bit awkward and maybe even a little strange to approach one's thoughts like this. But if we can do it, then we gain a perspective on ourselves and the stories we tell ourselves throughout life that's really unique. I was talking to one of our other meditation instructors, Eric Weinberg, this past week, and he mentioned, he said, well, you always have to watch for your story. Beware. Beware, because your story is going all the time. And it's really true, because our story could be, I am having a wonderful day because of X, or I'm having a terrible day because of Y or Z. And if we can be aware of the story and for a moment step outside of it, we'll see that the story is just all these little thoughts, and they come apart when you take out the linchpin of my and me and I. Just pull that out, and they fall apart. Part of the reason we do this is to change our habits and to recognize that we can change habits one thought at a time. If we can choose to have a different thought, we can choose to take a different direction. And this is the reason why we can practice with the structure of our day as a guideline. Because talk about habits. When I was talking last month about the morning habits, I am one of those people who when I wake up in the morning, I'm on autopilot. Because I haven't awakened yet, haven't had my tea, and I don't know where I am or what I'm doing. And so I have to follow the rote habit of I get up, I wash, I go to breakfast, I do all these things, I get ready for my day and so forth and so on. And what Bokar Rinpoche suggests in his book is that we have a rhythm to our day: morning, midday, and evening. And that he said, wouldn't it be great if you could choose your motivation in the morning and try to mindfully maintain that motivation during the day? And then use the structures, the created habitual structures of your day, to help carry out that motivation. And so, for example, I mentioned this last time, an interviewer interviewed His Holiness the Dalai Lama and said, what's the first thing you think of in the morning? And he said, I set my motivation for the day. And his motivation, of course, because he's trained in the Bodhisattva motivation to benefit and be of service to others, that's his motivation. He doesn't get out of bed and say, well, I sure hope I accomplish XYZ today. I get this chore done, I mark this chore off. You know, he doesn't do that. Instead, his motivation for the day is not checking things off a list, but rather, may my heart and mind be in the right place today. May everything I do today benefit beings in some way, even if it doesn't happen the way I intend. May everything I do today benefit beings in some way, and may we all come to Buddhahood. Because every day we interact with lots of people. The people we see on the street, the people we see at work, the people we see at home. Even if we're sort of living a quiet life and not seeing too many people, we still think of people every day. And so folks are present with us in person or in mind all day, every day. And so if our intention is to benefit all those people we see, fantastic. Because when we are looking at the benefit of others, our selfishness, which remember from the Four Noble Truths, Buddha said that self-centered motivation is the cause of suffering. So if we can give up our self-centered motivation and let go of it little by little by little, then we will suffer less. And so if every day we are able to do that, even just a little bit, a great benefit will come to us. And so that's why the Dalai Lama starts his day with the Bodhisattva motivation. And then the structure of his day is structured around that. First thing he does is get up and he goes to his image of the Buddha, which is his reminder of his own Buddha potential. He makes offerings to it and bows to it. Not because the Buddha particularly has asked him to do this, but because by honoring the Buddha that is without, meaning outside of himself, he honors the Buddha that is within him and nurtures it. Having done that, he then sits in meditation, taming his mind, as was the instruction of the Buddha. Remember, in the discussion of the Four Noble Truths, that fourth noble truth, the path that leads to being able to let go of suffering and let go of the causes of suffering, do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. That's the teaching of the Buddha. And so by taming his mind through the practice of meditation, he accomplishes the benefit of both himself and others. So he gets to carry out his motivation right away in the structure of his day. And then when we eat our breakfast, we can think that we offer our breakfast to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for the benefit of all sentient beings. By making offerings to the Buddhas, even though we don't see them, again, we nurture the Buddha potential that's within us. Next, we go into the main body of the day. During the main body of the day, most of us have to do some kind of interaction with other people or work or both. And so if we can use the structure of our work day to accomplish the benefit of others, so much the better. Can we carry out our motivation to benefit others at work or at home or shopping or on the road? The answer is yes. Because if we hold the Bodhisattva motivation, then during the day, we can think about others in big ways and in little ways. And the big way is to have the intention to be of benefit to everyone you see, you can actually, when you're going into an interaction, particularly if it's an interaction that kind of scares you a little bit, like I got to go see the boss, or I've got to go see these people I have to have a complicated conversation with, you can think before you even go in the room, well, whatever comes of this, may it be of benefit to me, may it be of benefit to all beings, and carry the bodhisattva motivation silently and invisibly with you as you go into that meeting or situation. This does not always work. Your mileage may vary. Sometimes I go into meetings and interactions with all the pure intentions in the world, but I've got these habits. Do you have any of those? And some of my habits are just not positive ones. They're egoistic habits that are born from a long time ago. And I'm still struggling with them. So I go into meetings and then somebody says something I don't like, then I get, and so forth and so on. This may or may not happen to you, but it definitely happens to me, so I can talk about my own situation. The thing to do when we begin to feel negative things about ourselves or about others is to use the slogan that I talked about the last time, the mind training slogan from the mind training book, Mind Training in 7 Points, where the teacher, Chikawa Yeshe Dorje, this ancient Tibetan from 10th or 12th, somewhere between the 10th and 12th century, wrote a list of 59 slogans that have formed the basis for training the mind. Some people memorize them, other people just practice the ones that they find to be most applicable to themselves. The one I talked about the last time is really, to me, the core slogan that we can use right now, which is 3 objects, 3 poisons, 3 seeds of virtue. 3 objects are things we like, things we don't like, and things we're kind of lukewarm toward, or I guess you could say indifferent toward. The 3 emotions are what the Buddha called the 3 poisons, the 3 mental poisons, attachment, aversion, and bewilderment. And so when we see something we like, our attachment is activated. When we see something we don't like, our aversion is activated. And virtually everything else we're sort of meh about. So what the instruction is to observe our mind, which if we practice mindfulness, we'll get to do this at least 10% of the time during the day. And we'll notice when we are feeling something. Again, what we're doing with that is stepping outside the story. Stepping outside the story of I'm having a terrible day or I'm having a terrible life because of XYZ or I'm having a great day or a great life because of XYZ. We step outside the story to say, I am feeling, and then we identify which of these 3 poisons we are feeling. It's not like the 7 dwarfs, sneezy, dopey, doc. No, it's like attachment, aversion, or bewilderment. So what we try to do is identify what we're feeling. And then once we know what we're feeling, we apply a discipline to it. And the discipline for attachment, aversion, are to think, well, I'm feeling this attachment and aversion, or aversion. Instead of acting upon it, I'm going to imagine that I take on the negativity of all sentient beings, all of their attachment, all of their aversion, because there's somebody out there feeling this right now. and then I take it on for all of them. The idea here being that if we can imagine it, even if we just imagine for just a moment taking on the negativity of all beings, we are not enlightened beings, so we can't actually accomplish this, but we are training our attitude toward anger, toward attachment, toward bewilderment. We're training our attitude to be one of, you know, I think I can work with this, rather than the attitude toward our anger, our attachment, and our bewilderment of being, run screaming. Because frequently when I feel anger or attachment, I run screaming because it's just too much. But if I can use this little discipline, 3 objects, 3 poisons, 3 seeds of virtue. I can actually take hold of that feeling, step outside it for a minute, say, I'm feeling upset. And say, well, lots of other people are feeling upset, so I imagine right now that I take on the negative mental affliction of all beings in this negative mental affliction that I'm feeling. And so in that way, we transform the negative thing into something positive. That's why they call it three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. The seed of virtue is actually with how we handle the negative mental affliction. It's not that the negative mental affliction itself is good inherently. It's that what we do with it is positive. And there are other things. That's sort of the macro approach to the middle of your day, is always keep in mind the wish to benefit beings. Just hold that in your mind. And then act upon the motivation of working with your negative mental afflictions rather than being swallowed by them. Does that make sense? And if we can do that on sort of the macro level, the micro level of little things that you can do to remind yourself of awakening are really lovely. I have some friends who like these kinds of reminders. Because they find them to be useful. Other people, when they hear these reminders, it kind of like sets their minds on edge. Because they say, you know, I'm a little obsessive and I don't think I could do that kind of practice. And the answer to that is, yeah, probably. If you think that it's a little too much, I wouldn't attempt it. Because they tell you to think about things while you're doing everyday things. For example, he says, when you're watching television, You can actually think, all reality is like this flickering light. All reality has the appearance of reality, but isn't really there. So for some people, that would be a little bit too much. But for some people, it really helps. Other folks can do such things as when they see something beautiful, they can imagine that they offer that beautiful thing to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for the benefit of beings. They can think, this beautiful sunset, I offer it to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas for the benefit of beings. Or these beautiful flowers that are arrayed here, I dedicate them to the benefit of beings, and so forth. And so all of these things are things that can be done. When we walk on the road or outside or even in our house, you can think, yeah, may I progress on my path? May I make progress on my path of awakening? When you go up a set of stairs, you can think, may I climb the path of liberation and bring all beings with me? When we take a train or ride in a car, may I ride the horse of diligence, and so forth and so on. I do understand that for some people this would be just a little bit much, but I do think it is quite lovely, the idea that if the things we are doing in that framework of the structure of our day can help us remember the Buddha and help us remember our own Buddhist path, our own path toward awakening, that's fantastic. So that's a little bit about what we would do during the day, because in the day, we stay quite busy. We have lots of things to do. We have lots of little things to accomplish. And one of the things we could do is we could use the things that we experience during that busy framework of the day to help advance our remembering of Dharma. So because today I have to have a slightly shorter Dharma talk, because I need to excuse myself about 15 minutes early to go to the McConnell Arts Center to prepare for the afternoon funeral service for our Dharma brother, Craig. I have to excuse myself a bit early, so I'm going to be a little bit short on my presentation today. But if I were to summarize what we talked about the day of a Buddhist practitioner, the middle of the day, what I would say is we try to bring with us the bodhisattva motivation that we engendered in the morning. We try to carry it out in our interactions with people. I mean, even if you're sitting across from somebody and you have no idea what to say to them, you can always make the motivation, may whatever I say be of benefit to them in some way, even if you don't know skill-wise what to do. That's really positive. And you can make offerings of the food you're served and the new items you receive. If somebody gives you a gift or you receive something in the mail, you can make an offering of that to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and then imagine that they return it to you for your own use and benefit. And when you do good things through the day, you can think, I dedicate the merit of this small action to all sentient beings. Again, as one teacher once said to me, if the Dharma is never far from your mind, if the Dharma is never far from your mind, you are never far from the Dharma, meaning that your life will be filled with opportunities from the point of view of cultivating the Dharma. You'll always have an opportunity. So you can look for Dharma opportunities throughout the day. In the next discussion, which will be next month. When we talk next month, we'll be talking about the evening of a Buddhist practitioner and how we prepare to end the day and how we carry that motivation even into sleeping and dreaming. Did you know, Kempo Rinpoche said, dreams are considered to be karmically neutral. I'm sorry, sleep is considered to be karmically neutral. And what we do before we go to sleep is important because it could flavor our sleep with either positive or negative things, which I think is really interesting. But we'll talk about that next time. Today, if there's any a discussion or so forth, we have about 10 minutes for questions, discussion, anything you might want to talk about. If you want to talk about situations that you've encountered or things that you've done, just let me know. Yes.
Hi.
Good morning.
You mentioned the linchpin of I, me, my.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that we pull out that linchpin of I, me, my?
Yeah, I think that the idea of I, me, and mine is woven into the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. You see, so the main, for me, I'll just talk about myself. The main character in my narrative is always me. And so what will happen is that I will go into an interaction or into a situation thinking, well, how can I, what do they say in the Dharma books? How can I defeat my enemies and protect my friends? That's what they say in Dharma texts. Often we'll go into situations like this. When really what we could say instead in our minds is, how can I benefit this person that I'm interacting with? How can I be of benefit to that person? You see the difference? So when you pull out the narrative of what's this going to do for me and change it to what's this going to do for other, then that moves that pin out just a little bit. It's something that happens incrementally because we have this habit of thinking about ourselves continuously. And so pulling it out all at once is going to be a little bit difficult, but can be accomplished if we meditate diligently and gradually under the direction of a spiritual teacher who has an idea about our patterns and habits and gives us Dharma practices that sort of match our habits and confusions. And those Dharma practices then begin to slowly, gradually transform them, those habits and problems. So the linchpin of ego fixation is pulled out gradually, first by changing our attitude toward other people, and then also gradually through cultivating compassion toward other people. At the same time, if we have the capability to do so, we could practice some of what's called the ultimate bodhicitta, which is a type of meditation where we sit and analyze our experience of the mind and the experience of the world to slowly come to the sense that there really is no I or me at home. And that's also something that will give us an intellectual, inferential, general idea that maybe the self isn't what we thought it was. And then as we slowly progress with this meditation, then the framework around that pin will start to crumble, and then the pin comes out very easily in meditation. Does that help? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Other things to talk about. All I can say is, Kempo Karthi Rinpoche said once, he said, you arrive at the first bhumi of bodhisattva awakening, which is the first moment of true selflessness. Before that moment of what they call the path of seeing, it's all kind of inferential and intellectual. He said it happens all at once in one session of meditation. He says you sit down as an ordinary being and you get up as a first level of bodhisattva awakened. He says it happens all at once. He said, but it doesn't happen by accident. It's something that you gradually cultivate. So that's at least the way it's been way I heard it. So thanks. Yes. This looks like this will be the last one. Quick question or review.
I heard you mention and discuss the, and maybe I just blanked out, but I heard you mention and discuss the three objects and then the three poisons. I didn't hear you say anything about the three virtues.
Yeah. What I did was I folded it in the, and when I was explaining it, I folded it into the explanation, and I didn't say the three seeds of virtue are. I just said that the three, by using the formula, may my negativity contain the negativity of all beings, or may my attachment or my aversion or my bewilderment, may they contain the attachment, aversion, and bewilderment of all beings. And by my working through this, may I and all beings be free of it, and so forth. By using that formula, it transforms the three poisons into three seeds of virtue, because the mental affliction is still not positive, but how we handled it is positive. And so that becomes the seed of virtue for us.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And it turns out we do have time for one more. So if there's one more out there, we can do it. Yes. Yeah, I get that question a lot, Arvin. I get that question a lot because I forget and I just fold it into the description and it goes right past. Thank you. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could give a clarification on the indifference.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, sometimes when I'm driving around or I'm into my daily things, there's other people, and sometimes I'm just like not too maybe considerate or too concerned with them.
Yeah.
You know, so is there. At those moments, should I just take the indifference in, or is there something else I can do to kind of change that?
It seems to me, I appreciate you mentioning this, because I do think that because the indifference is one way of describing it, bewilderment's another way, apathy, I've heard the word apathy used, and I think that it's smart to recognize when we are feeling apathetic or feeling indifferent. And you can use the same formula. May my apathy or my indifference contain the indifference of all beings, and may we be free of this bewilderment, apathy, indifference in the future. But you also can cultivate this sort of kind heart toward others. In Shantideva's book, The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. I'm going to get it wrong, but I think it's in chapter 5. I use this quote a lot, which is why I know where it is. It's problematic for me is that I've never really studied the book in super depth, but I pull quotes from it that really inspire me, and this one really inspired me. See if I can find it. Ha ha, I found it. It's chapter 5. Verses verses 77 through 80 of chapter 5. I'll just read them. He says, the goal of every act is happiness itself, though even with great wealth it's rarely found. So take your pleasure in the qualities of others. Let them be a heartfelt joy to you. So it's trying to make you aware of the goodness of others. Even if we don't know they're good, we try to have a sense, well, you know, They have qualities, and I rejoice in those. And see, so what that does is it cuts indifference by increasing our interest. Verse 78, by acting thus in this life, you will lose nothing. I mean, it's cheap, right? It's not easy. I mean, not hard. In future lives, great bliss will come to you. The sin of envy brings not joy but pain, and in the future, dreadful suffering. So he's using our tendency toward jealousy, envy, and competitiveness as a way of reminding us that there's worse things than indifference. But we can cut the tendency to be jealous and envious if we rejoice in the good that others have. So again, encouraging us not to be indifferent when we see and experience others. 79, verse 79, speak with honest words coherently, with candor and a clear, harmonious voice. Abandon partiality, rejection, and attraction, and speak with moderation, gently. And catching sight of others, this is verse 80, and catching sight of others, think that it will be through them that you will come to Buddhahood. So look on them with open, loving hearts. So even merely catching sight of others becomes the cause for removing indifference, because you remove the indifference and replace it with the wish for those beings to be freed from and liberated from samsara and be brought to Buddhahood. So thank you. Thank you. Okay. Well, this turned out perfect. Thank you for your questions and for being here today. I do apologize for this being slightly shorter than usual, but it's my hope that you'll take home some of at least the idea of the motivation of wanting to be of benefit to others. That's something that, as Shantideva would say, it doesn't cost us anything to wish to be of benefit to others, and it has great benefit in that it's training us to be less and less like our selfish selves and more like the Buddhas. So it's like that. So we'll sit quietly and dedicate the merit of this session. We dedicate the merit of this session to all suffering beings, especially those who are struggling with their three poisons right now. May all beings be free of suffering, come to happiness, and then to Buddhahood. And coming to Buddhahood, may they benefit all sentient beings endlessly. We mentally dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. And I had a chance to see Kempo Carter Rinpoche a couple weeks ago, and he sends his greetings to all of you. I'll try to write a little something about it this week. And he's just saying, you know, he's like, he's our cheerleader. Go, go, go. So anyway, so thank you. And so go, go, go on your practice and go, go, go on everything. So.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. For more information about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music on this podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.